and there was only one, so it wasn't exactly like what you described on the show. Nonetheless, it was a very strange experience. In the past, when I'd had nightmares and even experienced sleep paralysis, it only ended when I would open my eyes and sort of violently throw my body up, or gasp for air, or something suddenly jerky. This time, however, Anubis just kind of faded away, and I was once again able to move. Here's the weirdest part. My eyes were open the whole time. I didn't have to open them to wake. That's never happened before. I just thought it was some kind of a weird dream, and I wrote the whole experience out in my dream diary. It took 2 pages to describe the whole dream. I wondered for a couple of days what it meant to see Anubis in a dream, and looked it up online. There were numerous people having dreams about him, which kind of surprised me. The best answer I read, which kind of made sense, was that Anubis is a creature from another dimension, and probably wanders around in the dream world, so some people would be bound to see him. After listening to your show, I'm not so sure anymore. Then I heard a couple of Mothman stories on the show, and I got to thinking, maybe something terrible is going to happen, some kind of disaster or false flag attack or something. Maybe these creatures are showing up as a warning. Maybe the Anubis I saw was simply trying to tell me to wake up, to become more alert to what's going on around us. I hope not. I do remember a sort of similar thing happening in my neighborhood back when I was a kid. A bunch of us all experienced some kind of dark shadow creature moving through our separate bedrooms one night. It was strange, but I don't remember any disaster happening later. There are several notable things going on in this report that I'd like to point out. The first is that Bilotti had experienced typical sleep paralysis several other times in his life, but on those occasions he knew that he was dreaming, and there was no strange object present in the room. The second, and perhaps more interesting point, is that he and other children all experienced a dark shadow creature moving through their bedrooms on one certain occasion. These shadow creatures are more common than most people might think, and seem as likely to appear outdoors, in nature, as within the confines of someone's house. I don't know whether they are in some way related to the more solid-looking entities, such as the canine Matt describes, or whether they are merely some less realized form of the typical bedroom invaders. But according to Bilotti, the shadow creature of his childhood had the ability to move from room to room, and in different houses where his friends lived. And in his bedroom invader account, he became aware of the creature as it rushed in from outside the room. It did seem to behave more aggressively than most bedroom invaders. That implies that this creature, too, was also roaming freely in his house, or had at least entered it from some other point than the bedroom. Hallucinations and nightmares, as I understand them, don't roam freely around the world beyond the hallucinator's point of view. Bilotti told me that he had taken LSD a few times in his youth, but he saw this apparition, which so closely matches the experiences of those who have never taken hallucinogens, as an adult. There have been studies suggesting that in rare cases, however, LSD may cause flashbacks years later. It's called hallucinogen persisting perception disorder, and I think cannot be entirely ruled out in this particular case. But that doesn't explain the experiences of the majority who have nighttime visitors without ever having taken LSD. Anubis, the archetype. One final point I'd like to mention is that just because the appearance of these creatures reminds the witnesses of the black-furred, long-muzzled, and pointy-eared Anubis, it shouldn't be presumed that the entity that attacked Matt Bilotti was actually the Egyptian god, or had any connection at all to it. Neither should it be presumed they are entirely separate phenomena, since we really don't know. All I can say is that the Anubis comparison occurs fairly often in cases of these stranger types of dogman appearances. That leaves us to wonder what it is about this particular form of canine color and form that makes it such a frequently glimpsed nighttime visitor. Bilotti himself said, "Immediately I thought, why Anubis?" and figured it was a unique strangeness of mine. We are not Egyptian. I even had to look up Anubis's name because at first I thought the creature I saw was Horus. Anubis should have no subconscious meaning to Americans, and it's strange that many are seeing them. In my opinion, it's the physical resemblance these creatures bear to Anubis, the jet black fur, long muzzle, and triangular upright ears, along with the upright stance, that makes people mention the Egyptian god. The original depictions of Anubis always show him wearing symbolic Egyptian adornments and clothing, yet I haven't received reports of bedroom invaders wearing ancient garb. Most people today, however, are familiar with the Egyptian gods through popular media, and it's understandable that the Anubis image should come to the minds of witnesses. Leaving the subject of Anubis, we'll go on to explore other encounters with shadow creatures, like the one Bilotti saw in childhood. Encounter Case Summary: The Addison Anubis. Reported creature or creatures: a black-furred, upright canine that appeared in a man's home. Location, date: a home in Addison, Illinois, early November 2011. Earlier occurrences were several decades previous to that event. Conditions: nighttime, indoors. Associated phenomena: none observed. Unexplained actions or appearance of creature: creature appeared in house. Witness or witnesses: a 51-year-old man, also same male, and several of his friends as children at unknown age. Environmental factors: the village of Addison is a Chicago suburb. The Salt Creek Trail runs through it, and there are also a number of green spaces and parks, including the Maple Meadows County Forest Preserve. Louisiana Shadow Doggy. Most of the people who write to tell about night visits from wolf-like creatures feel that the entities were curious about them, but are otherwise clueless as to the purpose of the visit. One Louisiana woman knew for sure what her own visitor wanted, however. Age 29 at the time she wrote, she asked that I refer to her only as Nikki. I mentioned this incident briefly in The Michigan Dog Man, Werewolves and Other Unknown Canines Across the USA, but since her experience fits this chapter so well, and also brought another element into the night visitor scenario, it seemed deserving of a longer examination and more of the witness's own words. It happened in the spring of 1992. I grew up in South Central Louisiana, in a very small country area that was strangely unnamed, between two towns called Rose Pine and Leesville. As I later learned, it was an area once occupied by Choctaw and possibly even Coushatta Native Americans. I have Choctaw and Cherokee family members and ancestors. We had neighbors, yes, but they were spread out at a nice distance from us. On our land, in the back, was a sort of formation, almost like a balcony of dirt. It looked purposely formed. It overlooked an area that was marshy. It was extremely spooky in that spot at night, and we had heard a few strange noises in the woods. They didn't sound anywhere remotely identifiable. We always planted a garden, and it was while doing this one year, in an area we had not uprooted previously, that we came upon Native American artifacts. They ranged from arrowheads, bows, and arrows to earthen-made bowls. Being a small child, about 8 years old, I was delighted and took a few things into my room to play around with, as children often do. The first and second night, absolutely nothing happened, and I was having a lot of fun with my newfound toys. The third night, I was paid a visit by something I called the Shadow Doggy. Of course, everyone thought I was bonkers, but I know what I saw. I was lying in bed, sound asleep, when I suddenly snapped awake. The end of my bed was facing toward the door. I saw what at first appeared to be a dark mass. As I looked at it, it turned into what I can only describe as half man, half dog. There were no visible features, per se, except the outline of the body and ears on top of the head. I have no clue why I called it a doggy, I suppose because of the ears. Thinking back, the outline of the head reminded me of our pet Chow, whom we dubbed Bear, so maybe that's the reason. It didn't move or make a sound, just stared right at me. And even though I could not see the eyes, I knew it was staring at me. I was pretty terrified, and I jumped back under my covers and started screaming for my grandmother. She rushed in my room not a minute later, and I finally emerged from my blankets to find the shadow doggy was no longer there. I tried explaining time and time again what I had just witnessed, and I was told I'd had a bad dream. I believed that, or at least I really wanted to believe that. I was visited by this thing, ghost, spirit, guardian, whatever the case may have been, for at least 3 to 4 nights in a row, when on the 4th night, I noticed this shadow doggy had moved into my room and was now standing at the edge of my bed. It was also odd that I didn't feel as much fear as before, and I received what I now call a communication. It told me, without words, to basically put whatever I had found back in the ground where I had found it. I can honestly say I didn't feel much anger coming from it, just intimidation. Then it just disappeared, and I could see into the hall again. The very next morning, I was up bright and early, digging another hole in the ground and scooping everything back in, just like I was told. It never appeared to me again. However, I still have one of the arrowheads, and I have never had another experience such as that since, although I do feel watched sometimes, which does make me wonder. I often take that arrowhead out of my jewelry box and ponder what that shadow doggy really could have been. Nikki's experience was different from the others in several ways. One of the most important is that she was certain she was wide awake, rather than a quasi-sleep state, struggling to awaken. The creature didn't seem to be threatening her physically. Another difference is that it returned night after night, unlike most home visitations, which recur only sporadically, if at all. But the main thing that sets Nikki's experience apart is that the entity finally delivered a sort of telepathic message that included a rather clear demand that she take specific and immediate action and return the artifacts to where she found them. Because of this, said Nikki, and perhaps also owing to her Native American heritage, she felt that this entity was some sort of guardian spirit set to watch over that trove of ancient artifacts. She thought her family had unleashed it by digging their garden bed. I did think it bold of Nikki to have kept even that one arrowhead, but she explained, "I believe I kept the one so I would know I didn't dream what had happened. It had such a profound effect on me that I think I had to somehow hold on to it in the only way I could at the time." And I definitely want to add that if it had minded me keeping that one arrowhead, I'm positive it would have come back. So I suppose in a way, I feel almost blessed to be able to have something so sacred. The telepathic message is also an important factor that occurs in both indoor and outdoor sightings. In some instances, even when the encounter consists of only a fleeting glimpse by a passing motorist. This is a clue, I think, that perhaps all of those seemingly random roadside sightings may not be entirely random after all, and that perhaps much more is actually happening in them than is apparent at the time. Encounter case summary. Louisiana shadow doggy. Reported creature or creatures. Dog-like creature that appeared inside witness's home on 4 successive nights. Location, date, South Central, rural Louisiana, spring 1992. Conditions, night, indoors. Associated phenomena, telepathic communication of a specific message. Unexplained actions or appearance of creature. Figure of half-man, half-dog appeared as a completely black shadow, encroaching closer to the witness's bed with each visit. Visitation stopped when act requested by the creature was completed. Witness or witnesses, an 8-year-old girl. Environmental factors. Property was located near a marsh and a possibly artificial dirt embankment. The land was originally important to several Native American tribes and was the site of very old burial mounds. California bad dreaming. In certain situations where unknown creatures gain a foothold, sightings may plague whole neighborhoods for decades. One woman I'll call Darla wrote to me from such a place in Northern California, a small community named Oregon House after the Travelers Inn that started the settlement in 1851. It may be best known now as headquarters for an organization called Fellowship of Friends, developers of the highly respected Renaissance Vineyard and Winery. The group, which promotes spiritual development through development of arts and culture, bills itself as an esoteric Christian community. The members own a 1,300-acre tract in Yuba County. I offer that information only to help gain a sense of place for the area. There is no indication that the group is involved with any part of Darla's or her family's experiences. Darla's family also has a lengthy heritage in the area. Her relatives once owned the body of water west of town known as Collins Lake. Her grandfather and great-uncle had a sighting of something very frightening in their family home there in July 1949 when her grandfather was a child. As he and other relatives have told it, he began screaming in his bed one night, and his older brother ran in to see what was wrong. Darla's grandfather pointed to the window, where both boys witnessed what they remembered as a very tall, furry creature staring in at them. The family unleashed their dogs on the creature, which succeeded in driving it away. Other incidents continued through the years. Her grandfather had another encounter after he was grown, and his truck broke down one evening. It would only go at a snail's pace, and as he slowly made his way home, he found himself surrounded by a pack of very large dogs that circled the truck and tried to bite at him through the windows until he was finally able to get it going fast enough to get away. One neighbor saw a tall, furry creature running toward Darla's house one night and moved out of the area within a month, and another had the weird experience of watching a strange-looking dog on all fours run alongside and keep pace with his car. He had been driving at speeds between 40 and 45 miles per hour on his way to work at 4 a.m. in the summer of 2013. People have talked about hearing strange howls and growls in the area for many years. Darla had her own first encounter in the winter of 1997, when she was 6, and it was very much like her grandfather's childhood experience. She and a cousin were bedded down on the living room floor of her house when the cousin nudged her and told her a bear was looking in the window at them. Even at that age, the woman knew it wasn't a bear. She wrote, "The general shape was dog-like, pointy ears, thin-shaped head with broad shoulders, and standing about 6 feet high." Her second encounter came in the summer of 2006, when she was 15. She called that her first real, full-body, no-denying-what-it-was sighting. On this occasion, she woke up at 3 a.m. with the inexplicable urge to go outside. Sleepily obeying, she unlocked the front door, went out, and sat down on the trampoline in her front yard. "I looked up into the wide-open sky and looked around at all the stars," she wrote. "I had a very off feeling all of a sudden. Suddenly I broke out of my strange stage and realized, what am I doing out here?" She noticed the crickets had stopped chirping, and an eerie silence hung over the yard, a condition we'll address more fully later, but which happens often in tandem with sightings of anomalous creatures and other things. I felt scared, Darla said. Something was watching me. I instantly started to panic. I saw movement in my peripheral vision. I looked toward the back of the house and saw a shadow approaching. I started walking to the house, and just before I reached the steps, saw it at the end of the sidewalk. We stared at each other, standing still. Never having been so scared in my life, I ran for the door. I got inside and locked it. Looking back up out the window, there it was. 6 inches away from my face was the face of a wolf. Not just any kind of wolf. This creature was a werewolf. I have seen the movies. I have heard the legends and myths. It was about 6 feet tall, standing on its hind legs, built like a bodybuilder. It had mid-length, shaggy gray hair, and its mouth was open, showing me its sharp teeth. With what looked like a smile, its dark, dangerous eyes felt like they were creeping into my soul. With a shot of fear, I let go of the doorknob. In my head, I began to pray, turned around, walked down the hall, and leaned against a door frame to one of the rooms. I stopped there, thinking it was just a dream, slowly turned around, and looked at the front door once again. It was still looking at me through the window, resting its hand on the glass. I turned away and walked into my bedroom. I kept praying over my family for their safety and gently gave my sister a kiss on the head while she slept, lay down in my bed, and prayed myself to sleep. Before we get to Darla's third sighting, I'd like to note again, as we did in Chapter 7, that it's amazing how often these wolf-like creatures are perceived to be smiling, jeering, sneering, or making other similarly described faces. It makes me think of that human-handed dog in the limo in Orange, California, which appeared to smirk at the witness's surprise. It's true that some dogs just appear to be grinning because of the way their jaws are designed, but in the case of unknown canine creatures, this characteristic is so persistent over time and among so many reports that it indicates something else is going on. Most witnesses feel it denotes an attitude of superiority emanating from the creature. The other remarkable part of this encounter was the fact that the teen felt she was somehow induced in her sleep to walk outside, where she would be vulnerable. If this command did come from the creature, it implies not only a planned intent on its part, but that it had some sort of psychic access to Darla's dream state from its position outside of the house. Was it the same creature that had watched her 9 years earlier? Wolves and wild dogs are lucky to live that long, and it would seem a stretch that some wild wolf or dog might be able to psychically influence any human it came across. The ability to do that, if it was true, would make the creature's talent for walking on its hind legs look like puppy's play. Any house pet can be trained to walk upright if the treats are good enough. There are some videos on YouTube of bears with injured paws prancing easily on their short hind limbs and flat rear paws. But the feat of an animal getting into a sleeping human's head and telling the person to come to it is quite another thing, and I believe it belongs outside our known realm of animal behavior. And for its next trick, listen on. 2 years later, in the summer of 2008, when Darla was 17, the head games took a new twist. It was a warm, clear evening, and she was outside, lying on the hood of her father's truck and looking at the stars. Suddenly, she instinctively felt something watching her. She sat up and looked over her right shoulder. She was relieved to see her brother standing under a nearby tree, poised as if to lunge at her. She laughed and said, "Very funny," to her brother, adding that he couldn't scare her. Her brother said nothing. Suddenly uneasy, she turned to look at the house and saw her actual brother standing indoors, talking to her parents. When she glanced back toward the tree, the illusion was broken, and she realized she needed to run for the house as the creature started toward her. She made it inside just before it reached the front porch. Let's stop here again for a moment. 2 whole years have passed since the last incident, but it seems that what looks like the same creature is still hanging around Darla's yard, still has its eyes on her, and has upgraded its apparent mind control ability to make her believe she is looking at a trusted family member rather than an upright wolf. Whether it was able to shift its form to resemble her brother, or it manipulated Darla's perception to create the illusion in her own mind, I have no idea. Some might even say that 2 choices are actually different ways of looking at the same thing. Either way, this was a potentially dangerous situation for Darla, and the creature seemed to be noticing other family members, her brother and her mother, who had her own encounter a month or two earlier in that same year, 2008. And the creature seemed to be using the same telepathic tactics it had employed with Darla. It was sometime in the very early morning, wrote Darla, that she felt the urge to go outside. She just stood there in the doorway. She knew if she were to stick her head out, that would be the end of her. She stayed there for a while and eventually snapped out of it and shut the door and locked it. Another 2 years passed before Darla's 4th and final, so far, encounter. She was 19. I was driving home from work one night, she wrote, and saw one wolf-like creature crossing in front of me on Marysville Road. I was just about to turn down my road when it looked at me. I put my foot on the gas, and when I got home, I ran inside. That was not the end of the creature's seeming link to this family. It is as if it doesn't leave anymore, she said. Whenever we would go on hikes, something would be following us in the bushes. We have been chased home 2 times. Heard and later on discovered scratches 6 feet or higher on our outside walls. Seen eyes staring at us from our windows. Heard things brush against underneath our house, things walking on our rooftops in the early morning hours. Whatever these are, they have been watching my family for years on end now. They haven't done harm to us, but we have the feeling they wanted to. Darla has since married, and both she and her parents recently moved to other towns. They did try praying over and blessing the original family home and property, but there were still ominous signs that something was very wrong in the area. Neighbors and even local authorities would mention finding dead goats and dogs hanging in trees, for instance. She and the family also experienced sightings of other paranormal figures, such as ghosts and aliens, and her great-grandfather believed he had seen a Sasquatch. Northern California is one of the prime sightings areas for Bigfoot in the United States, and I would be more surprised they weren't involved in the Oregon House sightings if I didn't already know the Bigfoot and Dogmen are not likely to hang out together. Encounter Case Summary. California Bad Dreaming. Reported Creature or Creatures. Succession of large and upright wolf-like creatures over many decades. Location, date. Oregon House, California, 1997 to present. Conditions, varied, often at nighttime. Associated phenomena. The sense of being drawn outdoors by unseen force. Eerie and unusual silence. Possible animal sacrifice. Sightings of ghosts and aliens. Signs of unseen predator prowling around the property. Unexplained actions or appearance of creature. Wolf walking upright lurked around family, stalked them outdoors, used illusion to assume temporary disguise as a family member. Witness or witnesses. Darla and various family members. Environmental factors. Plumas National Forest lies just north of the town, and Oroville, a site of other upright wolf-like creature reports, lies only 20 miles to the northwest. Collins Lake lies just west of the town. Chapter 10. Hag Riders and Other Uninvited Visitors. I think it's interesting that while huge wolf-headed humanoid creatures make up the majority of house visitor reports that I receive, there are countless other types of entities worldwide that act in very similar ways toward witnesses. What causes these intrusive figures to appear in the homes, and particularly the bedrooms, of so many unrelated people? And might the other entities have something in common with canine home invaders? These episodes are very like a well-known, age-old type of nighttime visitor known in the popular lore of England as the Old Hag, or Hag Rider. The encounters usually occur when a sleeping or half-awake person suddenly realizes an entity of some sort is sitting on his or her chest, making it hard to breathe and impossible to move. That perception of being pinned to the bed is undoubtedly partly related to the common condition of sleep paralysis, but sleep paralysis doesn't account for the sense of a strange creature merely watching the sleeper. In Europe in the Middle Ages, this presence was often perceived as an ungracefully aged female or a witch. Many dictionaries accept either of these as a definition for hag, but it could also appear as a male or some other type of spirit, such as a hooded monk-like grim reaper known as the genii cuculati in ancient Roman myth and still reported today. British folklore is rife with such stories, although they may vary in the details. In one Kennet Valley tale dating from the late 1800s, a young man was literally ridden on many nights after a witch would sneak into his room and use an enchanted bridle to transform him into a horse. She would then force him to gallop great distances until morning, when he would awaken exhausted. He finally confided in a strong and large friend, who slept in the man's bed one night to see if he could capture the culprit. He was indeed able to wiggle out of the bridle and slip it over the witch's head to prevent her escape. This led to her identification and the end of her nocturnal journeys. The type of oppressing entity may also vary widely. Another older English tale, for instance, centers on a man named John Bird from the area of Batcombe, Sussex, who in 1868 claimed he was kept awake every night by a witch who sat at the end of his bed in the shape of a large hare. She was finally identified when Bird arranged a scythe across his open window so that it would cut the hare as it hopped into the room. Sure enough, the next morning he found a trail of blood that led to the supposed witch's cottage, and the great hare never darkened his window or bed again. Many researchers also connect the Hag Rider phenomenon to contemporary reports of nocturnal visits by presumed extraterrestrial aliens, usually the short greys or taller insectoid types, described as praying mantises. The main difference between most Hag Rider and alien visitors and the giant wolf-like intruders is that the hag and alien stories are more likely to include an element of unwanted sexual attention from the intruders, which might then be categorized with the succubus and incubus mentioned in previous chapters. Of course, there are other things reported to visit people in their beds, from vampires to glowing light forms. Whatever form the entity may take, this type of night visitation experience is universal, says Shelley Adler, assistant research medical anthropologist at the University of California, San Francisco. As she succinctly concluded in Out of the Ordinary, Folklore and the Supernatural, in a chapter titled Terror in Transition, there are innumerable instances of the nightmare throughout history and in a multitude of cultures. It should be noted she uses the term nightmare in the classical sense to refer to this type of experience, not the more general idea of a bad dream. Night Spirits of the Hmong. Adler focuses on a version found in the Hmong tradition, an entity the Hmong people call the Dadsaw or loosely evil spirit, which they believe lives in deep abandoned caves, similar to other subterranean creatures we examined in the first part of the book. She wrote of one example of a tussle with the Dabsa, experienced by a Laotian man named Chu Lor, who came to the United States in 1979. Lor was around 20 years old at the time and said he was wide awake during the attack as he attempted with great effort to fend off the entity. He could hear other people talking inside the house as he struggled with the thing that seemed intent on preventing him from breathing. The others heard him making noises, but by the time they arrived in the room, the episode was over. He said, according to Adler, "I was trying to fight myself against that, and it was very, very, very scary. That particular spirit was big, black, hairy, big teeth, big eyes. I was very, very scared." That description should be sounding similar by now, especially the big, black, hairy, long-toothed part. But as you have probably noticed, not all tall, black, hairy things that show up in people's bedrooms and homes sit on or even frighten the experiencers. Does this mean there are different types of unknown creatures, each with its individual purpose, bedroom hopping around the world? Visiting entities glimpsed and experienced by people as they are waking or falling asleep do vary from hopping hares to hellish hounds. But although this variety suggests otherworldly origins, Adler says that these frightening bedroom drop-ins may happen regardless of one's belief system, and that they shouldn't be scoffed at as just some scarier version of a normal dream. As Adler puts it, this combination of elements of waking, realistic perception of the environment, and sleeping, paralysis, and dreamlike visualizations is largely responsible for the nightmare's basic impact, not only on the Hmong, but also on people without animist beliefs. The perceived intrusion of a supernatural figure into everyday reality prevents the dismissal of the entire experience as merely an unconscious dream. Emphasis mine. A few more uninvited overnighters. Other night visitor witnesses feel the same conviction of reality regarding their own experiences. Here are a few brief examples plucked from my previous works and a few other sources. Eau Claire, Wisconsin, summer of 2003, 2:30 p.m. A man awoke and walked to the bathroom, and when he opened the bathroom door to return, encountered a snarling 6'5", muscular, jet-black, canine-like creature between him and his bedroom. It had large hands with claws, large fangs, and yellow, wolf-like eyes. It vanished when the man turned to reach for a baseball bat. The man stated a friend had performed New Age healing and cleansing techniques on him the day before. A similar creature was encountered by another Eau Claire man in his backyard only a year later. Byron Center, Michigan, mid-1950s. Woman with advanced educational degrees had multiple sightings of what she called a shadow wolf in her grandparents' barn and in the basement of their home. She described it as very large, with a humanoid body, and said, "It was sort of like it was in another dimension. I remember being very afraid, and I never told anyone." Southeast United States, date unknown. College professor awoke to find two upright, dark-furred dogs she said resembled the Egyptian god of the dead, Anubis, standing at the foot of her bed, and watched them move silently around the room as if examining it. They displayed no aggression and left the room as silently as they had entered. Ilkley Moor, Yorkshire, England, mid-1990s. As told by Nigel Mortimer in UFOs, Portals, and Gateways, a man was in bed, trying to go to sleep, when he heard the unmistakable sound of a large dog charging down the hall toward his bedroom. He then felt the air pressure in his room drop, as if all the oxygen were being sucked out, and saw a black, shadow-like thing in the shape of a wolf leap for him. He felt its weight as it landed on his chest, and despite the fact that he wasn't religious, he prayed for deliverance from suffocation. This seemed to work, but the next night, the wolf shadow came back and staged a repeat performance for his wife. Owning up to my own visitors. I cannot honestly say that I don't know what these witnesses are talking about. I've never before written or talked publicly about my own experience, but if Nick Redfern can bear his personal nighttime encounter to the world, I think I ought to follow his example. My visitors were not hags, nor were they hairy creatures. They caused no fear of suffocation. There was nothing sitting on my chest or throwing off my covers, but the experience was and remains extremely real to me. This occurred about 1989 or 1990, when my family and I lived in a house very near the downtown heart of Elkhorn, Wisconsin, with a yard that was open to the view of neighbors and passers-by from all sides. In other words, it was not located in secluded wilderness or rural surroundings. I believe it was in early autumn. I had slept very well that night, as I recall, but awoke just after dawn, when there was light enough to see clearly around the room. My husband was sound asleep. He was lying to my right with his back turned toward me, but as I glanced to my left, I could see we were not alone. I still had some degree of sleep paralysis, and although quite conscious, I couldn't yet move anything other than my eyes. It was just as well. To my great surprise, mingling about a foot from the side of my bed were three creatures I can describe only as grays, the typical large-headed, small-bodied, big-eyed things most people would readily identify as aliens. Shocked as I was, I could tell they were aware I'd awakened and that I knew I wasn't dreaming. I was by then trying as hard as I could to scream in the hope that my husband would wake up, but couldn't make my throat work. I finally managed to choke out a strangled sound that seemed to persuade them it was time to go, and I watched them immediately walk backward, single file, through the wall next to my nightstand. By then I had shaken off the paralysis entirely and was able to wake my husband, who had neither seen nor heard a thing. But then I remembered what was on the other side of that wall through which they had just passed, my youngest son's bedroom. I dashed into the hall and checked his room, but he was sleeping, the morning light streaming in through the window, with no sign of the weird intruders. I do not believe these creatures abducted me, then or any other time, and I awoke in exactly the same position and state in which I'd fallen asleep. No marks, no pajamas on backward, none of the usual signs abductees report. I've seen an occasional weird light or two in my day, as recently as August 12, 2015, but never a definite craft-type UFO. So what was this experience about? The visitation didn't seem familiar at all, just very strange. I didn't sense that there'd been any sort of communication between me and the three whatever they were, but it seemed they were there to observe me. Why, I'll never know. But here are some thoughts. A few days previous to this incident, I'd had very minor abdominal surgery, and I know from the great number of reports published by other people who recall being visited by grays that certain medical operations can be a precipitating factor. Again, it seems like a stretch to believe that these creatures or entities, if they do indeed exist as independent beings, would send a delegation to check on one person's simple operation out of the millions of far more complex surgeries I'm sure were performed around the world that week. As I said, all the entities did was stand there and look at me, and I had a vague sense that they had just arrived. Without taking anything away from the many witnesses who have reported much more comprehensive and interactive experiences with these types of beings, I can't help but wonder if, in my own case, perhaps the light anesthesia I'd had for that surgery caused a delayed, semi-waking hallucination. That sounds much more logical, but while I would definitely prefer it to the alternative scenario, it isn't provable either. And I am definitely not saying most other bedside cases, whether aliens, shadowy wolves, or other weird entities, are caused by hallucinations or waking dream states. As far as I know, none of the people whose experiences were recounted had surgery or anesthesia just prior to their visitation. Most people's bedroom encounters with alien-type entities also involve a lot more interaction than did either my experience or most of the canine-like visitations. Another factor in my own case is that I was probably more aware of alien and UFO literature than is the general public. My dad was a science fiction fan, so I've always been interested in the subject. But I'm much more afraid of, and better acquainted with, bears. So why didn't I see a group of black bears, rather than aliens, shuffling backward through the wall? I know one thing. This fully realistic, spatially correct experience that happened in a sunlit room while my mind was alert and trying to make my body react appropriately was unlike any dream or visual image my admittedly strong imagination has ever conjured up. While I can't explain it, it does make me fully appreciate the sense of realism insisted upon by others who report night visits by strange entities. And so far, the gray guys haven't shown up again. So far. Chapter 11. Jeepers, creature peepers. In some home encounters, the creatures do not actually enter people's domiciles, but stare into their houses, with noses pressed against the glass, like large hairy children at a candy store window. A few lurk around the corners of the house or garage, trespassing to spy out doors and driveways where the owners are likely to tread. These bold incursions seem as inappropriate as the bedroom visitations. The witnesses feel as violated, and the purposes of the entities remain just as mysterious and creepy. One example that gives me the shivers every time I think about it occurred in Decatur, Illinois, in summer of the early 2000s. I wrote about it in Hunting the American Werewolf, but to briefly recap, a middle-aged man and woman were awakened one night by a sudden and profound silence when the normally loud midsummer crickets suddenly stopped their chirping. They looked out of the front window to see four upright, dog-like animals proceeding single file down the street toward a neighbor's house, about 100 yards away on a slight rise. The creatures, which all had long muzzles and pointed ears atop their heads, then peered into the windows of the house for several minutes, while one climbed atop the roof, then walked away toward a wooded area. This type of invasion seems to happen in populous residential areas as often as it does in more isolated rural homes or farms. That would seem unlikely if we were talking only about animals that look and behave like normal wolves, dogs, or other creatures. But the trespassers in these next chapters possess many of the same uncanny characteristics as do the bedroom invaders. Red glowing eyes, extraordinary height, an intelligent and knowing gleam in their eyes. Most often they are jet black in color and display those tall pointed ears that remind so many eyewitnesses of Anubis. Like other sightings of unknown canines, they occur all over the world, and some go on for years at the same properties. We'll begin with one I received recently from Canada. Ontario Window Wolf. A heavy equipment operator for a Yukon mine wrote me in 2013 to share his childhood memory of what he was sure was a werewolf. George Terrence Charter is now in his mid-50s, but the eeriness of what he experienced at a very young age still shines through his account. I have carried an experience that I had for a number of years now from way back when I was just a child. I believe that I was 9 years old at the time it happened, and I can still see it to this day. I have never, ever seen anything like it before or after, and it really disturbs me as to what I actually saw. Mom and Dad owned a house in a little community about 30 miles west of Toronto known as Arendale, or Arran. We lived on Ashcroft Crescent in a semi-detached home with a daylight basement, meaning that the concrete came up for the foundation about 3 to 4 feet before the main floor of the house. There were windows in the foundation. You had to climb a set of concrete stairs to get to the front door of the house's main floor. You will understand why the height is so important in this sighting later on. My father worked as a dispatcher for bulk carriers in Cooksville, another nearby community. Most often, Dad had to work the graveyard shift and would not come home until morning time. That left Mom, myself, and my little sister Diane, who would have been about 4 years old at the time, alone in the evenings. One night, Mom had already gone to bed, and Diane was also in her room sleeping. I was up watching an old Universal horror movie called The Creature from the Black Lagoon. I loved horror movies, and I loved building monster models by Aurora. I must have had 50 or more models, mostly monsters, by the time I was 10 years old. My aunt would not sleep in my room when she would come down from Owen Sound, Ontario, not unless I removed the models. The movie ended, I think, and I turned off the TV and lights. I asked Mom if I could sleep with her, and she said, "Yes, but bring me an ashtray, Terry." Mom had the terrible habit of having a half a cigarette while in bed. So I went and got Mom an ashtray. When I returned to the bedroom, there was a window directly above my mom's bed, and staring and glaring at me with bright yellow eyes was a huge werewolf, snarling and showing its teeth. I only remember seeing its head, long snout, pointy ears, and the most terrifying thing you could ever imagine. Absolutely a wolf, a werewolf. Not a speck of doubt in my mind. I screamed and jumped into bed with Mom. She got up and looked, but nothing was there. I never saw it again. Only the once, and I was so scared to look at any window after dark. Our house backed onto an apple orchard, railway tracks, and a short walk away was Raft Pond, where we would catch big frogs and push an old raft all over the pond. There was also a river not far away from our home, too, known as the Credit River. I'm mentioning this for your info, as it seems in your book that many accounts have been close to waterways. Getting back to my sighting, in order for me to have seen this werewolf in my mom's window, it had to be at least 8 feet tall. I went back to the home years after Mom and Dad had sold it. I asked the new owners if I may look in the backyard to see the back of the house. That's when I could not understand how anything could have looked in that window. It had to be huge, unless there was a box or something under the window at the time to get up on. I believe that my dogman, or werewolf, had to be 9 foot tall or better to look in that window back in 1967. From the ground level, grass, 3.5 feet of concrete to the floor system, add 8 to 10 inches for floor joists, subfloor, and flooring, then at least 4 feet to the bottom frame of a bedroom window from the floor. That is approximately 8 foot 4 inches to the bottom of the window. And I saw its whole head, looking straight at the window from the foot of Mom's bed. I would not have been all that tall at 9 years old. Another thing that I should mention is that even though I was crazy about monsters, in particular the Universal monsters, the Wolfman at the time, which was played by Lon Chaney, had a more human head. This did not. This creature had a wolf's head. I don't believe that the motion picture industry had a more wolf-looking werewolf anywhere at the time, back in the 60s. I saw what I saw, and I'll swear I saw it on a stack of Bibles. It has bothered me my whole life. I have never hallucinated. I have never seen anything else in my whole life like this. Your book has been a real eye-opener for me, especially. I'm not the only one who has seen this thing, and it's downright scary. I think we'll all know the real truth one day about these creatures, because they are real. I believe the height of the creature is one of the most surprising observations here. A 9-foot-tall wolf is one whopping large canid, especially since most upright canines are described as between 5 and 7 feet in height. But cryptids of all sorts can appear abnormally big. It's their right as cryptids. And I was glad to see that this witness had already considered, examined, and rejected the possibility that the huge wolf's head he saw in the window was influenced by his admitted fascination with movie monsters. I also doubt whether he would have made the effort to return to the location as an adult to test his own memory of the creature's implied height if he hadn't been sure his sighting was not merely a child's imagination working overtime. Charter was also correct in his assumption that the upright canids and many other cryptids, such as Bigfoots, are usually seen near some type of waterway. They are also frequently seen near orchards and railroad tracks, so the terrain he lived in at that time would have been an ideal habitat for such a visitor. Interestingly, Charter wrote in a recent update to me that he and his wife had recently moved to a property close to water sources and featuring orchards. My recommendation to the couple would be to make sure the windows in that new home are well curtained. Encounter Case Summary. Ontario Window Wolf. Reported creature or creatures. Large, wolf-like, upright creature. Location, date. Arendale, west of Toronto, Canada, 1967. Conditions. Nighttime. Window viewed from within the house. Associated phenomena. None observed. Unexplained actions or appearance of creature. Creature would have had to be 8 to 9 feet tall in order to see through window. Creature had approached house and window, displaying apparent curiosity about the humans inside. Witness or witnesses. A 9-year-old boy with great interest in monster movies. Environmental factors. Nearby water, orchards, and railroad tracks. The Calgary Creature. One of the most recent calls I've received about creatures too close for comfort was also from Canada, from the city of Calgary in Alberta. It seems not all close encounters take place while witnesses are indoors. A woman called me on May 6, 2015, to tell me about a sighting she'd had right behind her garage in a residential area only 2 days prior, in the early morning of May 4th, and another sighting by her grown daughter within the past year. And she actually used the phrase, too close for comfort, when describing the encounters. The family started hearing strange animal sounds almost as soon as they moved in, she said. So did the 2 large breeds of dogs they raise that are kept in kennels in the backyard. The dogs became very nervous and agitated, said the woman, whenever they heard the sound she described as a mix between a howl and a cackle, but at a very different pitch than a wolf's howl. When that sound starts, all the dogs go insane, she said, adding that it usually lasted over an hour. The family members would also often hear something running on the dry grass just outside their yard after dark. She and other family members would catch glimpses of something moving extremely fast through the trees on a neighbor's yard, but were unable to make out what it was. Something also seemed to be preying on small animals in the vicinity. First, she said, all the coyotes seemed to disappear. Perhaps partly because of that, their lawn was overrun with small gophers, possibly some species of pocket gophers, digging tunnels and ruining the grass, until one night last summer, the family heard the usual ominous sounds from the woods and yard. When they woke up, the tiny invaders had completely disappeared and never came back. The neighborhood deer seemed to vanish at about that same time, too. Then one night at about 11 p.m. in late October 2014, her daughter, a nursing student, was returning home from work and received a jolt when she pulled into the family's driveway. It was in her headlights, said the woman. It was about 40 feet away, in the high beams, and was standing there looking around as if looking for something. It was on two legs, and she watched it for a few minutes, afraid to get out of her car. She described it in full detail. She's 6 feet tall, and she said it looked bigger than her, probably 7 to 8 feet tall. It was dark gray, and it looked like a wolf with